Thanks for joining us. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane Rehm while she's on vacation. President Obama said yesterday that an overhaul of the U.S. healthcare system was, quote, closer than ever. But even as the administration presses to revamp the $2.5 trillion healthcare industry, the president is facing growing opposition from lawmakers in his own party, as well as from Republican leaders. Joining me in the studio to discuss the debate over restructuring healthcare and opportunities for consensus, Julie Rovner, National Public Radio. Holly Bailey covers the White House for Newsweek. Karen Tumulty, National Political Reporter for Time Magazine. Welcome to you all. Good morning.
Good morning.
Especially to you, Holly, first time on the show.
Yes.
We're particularly to have you here on the Diane Rehm Show. And you can, as always, join our conversation. 1-800-433-8850 is our number, drshow@wamu.org, our email address. Karen, big headline in the New York Times this morning. This is Barack Obama's defining moment. Now, we've had several defining moments already, but do you agree that this is at least an important moment in his presidency? If so, why?
Well, I do, because let's face it, this is the biggest legislative lift since Lyndon Baines Johnson in 1964 and 1965 tried to get Medicare and Medicaid passed. And it is something that requires not only the extraordinary communication skills that we have seen from this president, but also an ability to sort of cut the deal, to do the legislating. And that is, I think, the real question right now, because I think that these divisions, these problems that the bill is encountering, were completely predictable. And in fact, the White House has been predicting them from the very beginning. So the Hill seems to be going a little bit off the rails right now. The president believes time is very short. So it really is now on Barack Obama's shoulders to get everything back on track.
And Holly, we also know from the past that success breeds success and defeat breeds despair, that it's not just about health care, it's about the rest of his agenda.
Right. And I think that's why they waited a long time to get into this debate. They wanted to see Congress sort of start tackling this bill before Barack Obama got into it. You know, what's weird about that is that Congress, there was sort of a dance. Congress said at first, well, we don't want, you know, the president to dictate exactly what and should be in the bill. And so the president sort of stayed away. But then, you know, Congress said, we do want him to tell us what he wants. And that's what their position is right now. And so there's been this sort of strange dance in Washington. But I agree with Karen. It's become, you know, his problem. It's on his shoulders. And I think we're going to hear him talk a lot about that tonight.
Why do you think, Holly, when you talk about it tonight, why do you think he has decided to make this fight so important? I mean, he's putting a lot of his chips right out there. You cover the White House. What's the talk inside? Why is he doing this?
Well, it's, you know, obviously it was one of his big campaign promises from last year, but they know they're looking at the timeline here. If they don't get it done this year, you know, next year it's the 2010 elections. And then after that, it's the presidential campaign again. So when is the, you know, other opportunity to do this? But it is interesting. I mean, they're putting it all on the line. And, you know, early on, we sort of focused on the first 100 days, you know, and looking at what was accomplished then. And then this week we did the first 6 months. But this really is, you know, the first really big fight he's had.
Now, Julie, you have been following this very closely, including the changing nature of public opinion. And one of the moving parts here is a small but significant decline in public support. Washington Post, ABC News poll this week. First time public approval of his handling of health care below 50%, 49%, down from 57%. What are you seeing in terms of public attitudes?
Well, the problem with health care is that it's so big and so complicated that the public is never really going to understand all the moving parts of this. So the public is really always going to be sort of amenable, if you will, to demagoguery and arguments one way or the other that don't necessarily link to what the substance is. We've seen this. We saw this during the Clinton, you know, efforts. I'm sure we saw this during Medicare. It goes all the way. I'm sure we probably saw this, you know, when Teddy Roosevelt was trying to do health care, that the public is kind of easy to sway depending on the nature of the argument. So you really
And how the argument is framed.
And how the argument is framed. It's all about language and semantics and who's doing a good job. And I think that's part of why we're seeing the president stepping in. This was really the anti-Clinton strategy. They wanted to do this administration, which is populated to a large degree with people who were there during the Clinton administration, saw that when the president tried to write a bill and deliver it to Congress as a fait accompli, that was a prescription for disaster. Congress had no ownership. They didn't like it. They, you know, it just didn't happen. They waited too long to do it. So this administration tried to tee it up first. They tried to let Congress do it, keep the president out. What's happening now, though, is that as Congress starts its, you know, typical internecine warfare, you need leadership. You need someone to be able to go over the heads of the Congress to the public. That's what we're seeing.
And, Karen, that leads into my next question. Tonight, the president will be addressing a news conference. He's given a number of interviews this week. He's going to go to Cleveland later in the week. It's Cleveland Clinic, one of the examples of more efficient health care delivery. If it's so critical to frame what the debate's about, what is the president trying to do? How is he trying to frame this debate? How is he trying to convince Americans, who many of whom are happy with their health care, that this is actually an essential change?
I think that he's trying to convince them of about 10 different arguments at once. The first is that the system is broken, that it's broken and it's only going to get worse, and that every other problem in this economy cannot be fixed until you fix the health care system. The second thing that he is trying to convince Americans of is that he says it at every event, if you like what you have, you're not going to have to give it up. But I think third, he has to address the question that a lot more and more people have on their minds, which is, well, what precisely are we talking about here, Mr. President? Because one of the things that has changed the political dynamic is the fact that the work product that is coming out of Capitol Hill has some pretty serious flaws, and some flaws that are being pointed out by very credible experts, the Congressional Budget Office, the Mayo Clinic, which is the model that President Obama says he wants to see all medicine practice. These are sources that are now saying this plan that these congressional committee chairmen have come up with, it does a good job of covering everyone. It does not do a good job of changing the way medicine is practiced and doing it in a way that will bring down health care costs in the long run.
And Holly, a big part of this also has to do with convincing ordinary Americans that they have a stake in this, since a lot of people's health care is covered. I bet there isn't one in 100 Americans can tell you exactly how much they pay for their insurance. I can't. I bet you can. There was a very good analysis in the front page of the New York Times this morning saying what the president has to answer the question is, what's in it for me, for ordinary Americans? How's he going to try to do that?
Well, I think, you know, the White House, you know, the president has said before that he reads the New York Times, and I bet he read that article this morning, and I bet it will shape a lot of what he's going to say tonight. I think what we're going to see is Professor Obama come out. We saw him at a news conference earlier this year sort of go before the American people and explain exactly how we got into this predicament and why it's important to fix it. I think we're going to hear that from him tonight. As for specifics, you know, we're still sort of waiting to hear. I mean, one thing I've really been struck by in the past week is that the president, you know, while he's come out in support of these bills, he's not really said, this is my bill. I'm wondering if he's going to say that tonight.
Well, that, Julie, leads to another question, which is, we've been anticipating now, since Obama was elected, that he would be able to engage and utilize this vast army of supporters, 13 million people on his email list. And this is really the moment when trying to take the lessons he learned during the campaign and use so effectively to translating into governing. What's that part of the strategy? How effective could it be, you think?
Yes, he's taken this group called Obama for America, and it's now called Organizing for America. It's now an arm of the Democratic National Committee. I actually went to one of the organizing meetings back, I guess it was in May or early June, and it was interesting because even then there were splits within. There were these people who went out and knocked on doors to get the president elected who were saying, well, why aren't we doing single payer? And other people saying, well, we should, you know, really do what it is that the president is asking. And so there were people were saying, well, what is it that the president is asking, you know, that he's got these, at that point he had these sort of, you know, three principles: we should cover everyone, we should control costs, and actually I forget what the third one is even now. So it was a little bit difficult, but yes, they've got these email addresses, they've got these people mobilized, they've had some of these, you know, organizing events, and they want to get them out knocking on doors. The idea behind the Texas was to really come out and have a counterforce to these ads that we expect to see from the drug industry, perhaps from the insurance industry, from the opponents, you know, of a health care overhaul, saying, you know, this will be bad for the country. But I think in essence what we've got is that everybody's going to have to give something up if we're really going to do this. Nobody ever wants to give anything up.
Well, one of the themes that clearly is coming through in your analysis is that until the fight really crystallizes, it's hard to know how the president steps in here. And, of course, during the campaign, as you wrote frequently, Karen, one of the ways that the president was able to energize his base, you had a very specific question, do you want Barack Obama or not? You had a very specific deadline, Election Day. Translating that mechanism into legislation proving a lot more complicated.
Although the president is trying to create that deadline, mm-hmm. he is trying to say he wants a bill out of the House and out of the Senate by the August recess so that Congress would then go off for their what is euphemistically known as district work periods, but is actually their month-long vacation, and come back, and it would go to a House-Senate conference committee, and in the perfect world, you know, the bill would be
presented. But the deadline is really slipping, isn't it?
The deadline is, there's a lot of pressure on that deadline because particularly in the Senate, where the Finance Committee is really trying hard to come up with a bill that could actually get some significant Republican support, they're saying, wait a minute, why so fast? You know, we understand we've got to do this by the end of the year, but why does that mean we have to have a bill out of the House and the Senate by August? So, you know, that is also something I think the president's going to have to deal with in his news conference tonight, is answer the question that's increasingly being asked, what's the rush?
And, of course, he has said in many interviews, if you don't set a deadline in Washington, nothing ever happens. But as you point out, this is also one of the arguments Republicans are making, not so fast.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, I think that that is, again, because he's trying to push this so quickly, I think that has also accelerated his timetable for saying what exactly he stands for.
Karen Tumulty of Time, Holly Bailey of Newsweek, Julie Rodner of NPR. I'm Steve Roberts sitting in for Diane. We'll all be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Steve Roberts sitting in today for Diane. And the subject this hour, President Obama's push for health care reform. He will address the nation tonight, primetime news conference. He's been speaking in many venues all week, ratcheting up his involvement in this. And with me to talk about it, Julie Rovner covers these issues for NPR, Holly Bailey, White House correspondent of Newsweek, Karen Tumulty, national political reporter, Time Magazine. And Holly, one of the problems, we've touched on this, but I want you to go into it a little more in depth, that's confusing this fight are splits in Democratic ranks.
Right.
And one of the things we found is when you win an election and you elect a lot of members and you have a big majority, it's a much more diverse majority. And you have these blue dogs, conservatives and border state. Give us an analysis, or give us our leaders, our readers and listeners a sense of the splits in Democratic ranks.
Well, you know, as we've noticed this week, you know, President Obama has been focusing a lot on Republicans and especially Jim DeMint. But it is true, Democrats, there are a lot of Democrats who are raising questions about this. The Blue Dog Democrats, the conservatives in the House are concerned about how to pay for it. President Obama had them over at the White House yesterday to talk about this very subject, and they emerged. And it seemed there was no consensus. And a funny moment actually happened on Capitol Hill yesterday. Charlie Rangel sort of walked by this whole gaggle.
This is the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee from New York.
He walked by this entire gaggle of reporters complaining about Nancy Pelosi and the president and how fast this was moving. I mean, a lot of people are complaining. But the White House really hasn't, you know, while they've been leaning on Republicans, they haven't been publicly leaning on Democrats as yet.
Although, didn't the Democratic National Committee run some ads in districts?
Right. Organizing for America did. And, you know,
Does this make a lot of sense to have your
Harry
own party
Reid,
run?
Harry Reid was very upset about this. He said it's a waste of time. It's putting Democrat versus Democrat. And so the White House has been really walking very gingerly around this.
Karen.
There's another split among within the Democratic Party as well that I think is worth talking about, which is the split between the House and the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the House has the numbers to get any bill through that they want to, pretty close at least, whereas the Senate, you are really and truly going to have to produce probably a much more conservative bill. So there's a real fear among House members that they have their own memories of the Clinton years, that they go out and they vote for some sort of big tax increase, they vote for a big new public plan, only to see Barack Obama go over to the Senate and bargain it away. And so, you know, this is a memory in Washington. The word BTU is a verb because this happened when Bill Clinton was doing his budget deal. And a Democratic member of the House said to me last week, he said, you know, we all like Rahm Emanuel, but we remember where he was in 1993.
And isn't this also a reassertion of a basic truth about American politics, that there is not a conservative majority and there's not a liberal majority, that you have to govern to some extent with moderate independent centrist votes, and that you're now seeing this. You've got 43 or so Blue Dog Democrats in the House. They have enough members on one of the committees to slow down legislation. So Nancy Pelosi or even Barack Obama does not speak for all Democrats.
That's right. And again, the other thing about the House, too, is they run every 2 years. So they know whatever happens this year, all of them are going to be answerable for next year.
Now, Julie, Holly mentioned Senator Jim DeMint of South Carolina, widely quoted, including by Barack Obama, who loves the line that this is going to be his Waterloo. We can break him. Bill Kristol, prominent conservative columnist, said we should go in for the kill. What's the emerging Republican strategy?
Well, the emerging Republican strategy, and watching Bill Kristol talk about this, because, of course, it was Bill Kristol in late 1993 who wrote the now famous memo. He was working for, I guess, was it Dan Quayle at the
Dan
time?
Dan Quayle, yeah.
Yeah, who said that, you know, he was the first one to say that Republicans should just say no. That was, you know, at the time, Republicans were trying to figure out how to be on board and, you know, maybe make the Clinton plan a little bit less bad. And Bill Kristol wrote the now famous memo that said Republicans should just step out and try to kill it entirely. So here's Bill Kristol much earlier saying Republicans should kill it entirely. But indeed, what we saw, you know, Michael Steele the other day, the head of the RNC, saying that, you know, they're going too fast. This is an experiment. This is, you know, socialism. You know, Republicans have really come out very strongly saying that they want to just make this whole thing go away. They're trying to relive the Clinton years.
And there are certain words that keep recurring: reckless, experiment, too fast, trying to play on this anxiety that you were talking about earlier in terms of the polls.
Yes, I think one of the things that certainly was learned from the last time around, and one of the reasons that the mantra that we keep seeing from the president, and I think also from the Republicans, is if you like what you have, you can keep it. There's 160 million Americans who get their insurance on the job, either themselves or for their families, and that seems to be definitely everybody's, you know, if you like it, you can keep it. Americans with health care are afraid of change. They really, as much as people know that the healthcare system is sick and things need to be fixed, people who are happy with what they have don't want to be forced to change. And Republicans are trying to play on that. You will have to change. That's the biggest thing.
Afraid of change, Karen, and also afraid of taxes. And if you go back, and if there's one word that was at the core of the Republican success in the last generation, that word is taxes. And given the stories coming out of the Hill of various proposals to raise taxes, even if they're only on the rich, this is part of what is really scaring a lot of conservative Democrats, particularly in marginal districts, who already could see the ads being run against them a year from now.
Well, the fact is that this is, you know, to do this, it's going to cost $1 trillion over 10 years. And the budget rules in Congress are such that you are not allowed to increase the deficit to do it. So you're going to have to pay for it. And taxes are what it comes down to, because you really can't sort of squeeze enough waste, fraud, and abuse out of the system to get you there. But I do think it's
particularly since the Congressional Budget Office very strongly said that the current bills actually would not make the savings even that the Congress said they would.
Exactly. But I do think it's worth noting that there's one thing, though, that's very mm-hmm. different about the political environment, which is that people are a lot more afraid of losing their health insurance. Mm-hmm. There are now 10 million more uninsured Americans than there were when it was tried in 93 and 94. People are seeing people lose jobs all around them, even if they haven't lost their own job. And they know that when you lose your job, you lose your coverage.
Important point. Now, Holly, final set of players in this, of course, are the various interest groups, major players, the drug companies, the insurers, the hospitals, the doctors. And as Julie pointed out, during the Clinton years, there were very strong ads, the famous Harry and Louise ads run by the medical establishment, helped kill the bill. But now we're seeing a much more confused picture. Give us a rundown of where the interest groups line up here.
Well, the president earlier this week touted the fact that, you know, the American Medical Association came out in favor of the bill that's promoted by the House Democrats and the Senate Help Committee. But, you know, what's interesting about that is that that's the national organization. And now we're seeing some splits where the state organizations aren't exactly supportive of these bills. So there's splits there. One thing I would say about the environment is I'm a little surprised that we haven't seen. I mean, living here in Washington, you watch television and their ads dominating all the time from interest groups. But it seems to me that it hasn't been as much as we expected with this debate. And I'm not sure if it's because we don't have specifics in the bill just yet, but it's been sort of quiet. But you know, it's a whole overall cloudy picture. Everybody that sort of comes out and in favor of this, the nurses, the doctors, there are splits within their own groups, and that's upping the difficulty for this bill.
And Karen, Julie was talking about one of the changes since the last time this debate dominated Washington: more Americans having lost health care, more afraid, particularly in this economic environment. Another change is the attitude of American business, which has given the enormous burdens of healthcare costs. We saw this with the auto industry previously, far more critical of reforms than they are today. Talk about the role of American business and what they're playing.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things that the president really did was try and bring these stakeholders, if you want to call them that, to the table. And I think one of the reasons that Holly said we haven't seen a lot of ads is that a lot of these groups are still on the sidelines waiting to see what they might get.
And like the Democrats, they're also split.
Right. Like, yes, you know. Indeed. You know, a lot of these, you know, bills have mandates in them, which business absolutely hates. They don't want to be required to either offer their workers insurance or pay into a pool from which insurance would be offered. On the other hand, you know, these health care costs are absolutely breaking them. And so they would like, they are at the table. And so they're having a chance to participate in helping to shape this legislation. And business really knows that, you know, looking down the road, they cannot sustain the current system. I think one of the big differences between this time and last time is that last time, a lot of these, you know, interest groups thought that, okay, the status quo was all right, was acceptable without legislation. This time, they're looking, you know, if this legislation tanks, can they stomach the status quo? And a lot of them are saying no.
And Karen, in terms of the interest groups, each one has their own set of priorities. And as we were discussing, they're in some ways holding back because they don't know what the final bill is going to look like. You take the insurance industry. They're all for a mandate to expand coverage because that's more customers. But they're all against a public option which would compete with private plans. So every player here is trying to calculate the costs and benefits in their self-interest.
Yeah. In fact, I'm trying to remember. I one time heard Julie on National Public Radio formulate it it was
the 80-20 rule.
The 80 go for that.
Okay. The 80-20 rule, which my friend Grace Marie Turner from the Galen Institute describes, which is that every single group has 80% that they like and 20% that they can't abide. The problem is that that 20%, every 20% is different. So we were just saying the 20 for the insurance industry, the 20% that they can't abide is the public plan. For the business community, the 20% that they can't abide is the mandate. For, you know, for the doctors, it would be the 20%. You know, they don't like a public plan that wouldn't pay them enough. So everybody has a different 20%, and that 20%, when you add it up, comes up to 100% of the bill. It's a big problem, and that's the perennial problem of trying to put together a bill this big.
Now, one final point, when Karen and Holly both talk about this. When we think about the president tonight and his whole week, this fight is not in isolation. He's got a lot of other battles. One of the key questions here is how Democrats define their self-interest. They might have concerns about the taxes. They might have concerns about their own district. But as you wrote in your blog, it's hard to say no to a Democratic president, a newly elected president, who, when he puts his power on the line, a lot of Democrats say, look, I'm tied up with him because if he succeeds, I succeed. Talk about how the president is dealing with these Democrats, and can he pull this off, do you think?
Well, I thought that yesterday's meeting with the Blue Dogs on the Energy and Commerce Committee was really interesting because apparently the president spent 3 hours with this group of conservative Democrats, and they all came out saying that there was, in fact, one big thing they could agree on, which is changing the way Medicare sets its the way it pays doctors and hospitals. And instead of leaving this in the hands of Congress where it gets politicized and basically turns into pork, that it should be given to an outside commission. I think we're going to have to see the president doing a lot more of that.
And what's your read, Holly, about, is the president at a point where he's basically saying, are you for me or against me to Democrats?
You know, it's interesting. It's, a little, in some ways, yes. But I still think we haven't seen the strong arm of Barack Obama on the Democrats yet. Mostly he's been leaving it up. I mean, one thing that you can say about this president is that he has a lot of people on board that are, you know, willing to go up on Capitol Hill and spend hours and hours, Rahm Emanuel, so on. But I don't think he's put on the pressure yet.
I'm Steve Roberts, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Good timing, because we have on the air Linda Douglas from the White House, who is the spokesman on health care policy in the White House. Linda Douglas, welcome to the Diane Rehm Show.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me.
We were just talking about the question of how the president utilizes his enormous political powers and what he's going to say tonight and what he can tell the American public that will galvanize support, given the fact that, as you well know, there's been some slippage in the polls in terms of his approval on health care. What's his task tonight and this week?
Well, you know, what he's been doing, you know, throughout this entire initiative is to really remind the American people of what is at stake in their own lives. I don't know if you've already discussed the very interesting piece that was in the New York Times this morning by David Leonhardt.
We just did, yes.
Well, this is so fascinating that, you know, in every individual household in this country, Americans are aware that their health costs are rising faster than their wages, that they are underinsured. You know, more than half of the people in this country really don't have enough health insurance to, you know, successfully take their children to the doctor when they need to get the medications that they need. Your wages have stayed flat while your employer is compensating you more and more with health benefits. It's crushing state governments. They're spending something like 30% more on health care now than they were a decade ago. All of these facts in personal lives, in businesses where they know they can't hire new people because all they can spend their money, their discretionary money, on is health benefits. All of this is sort of being experienced in an individual way all around the country. And what the president is going to do tonight, and as he's been doing throughout, is really lay out for the country again what is at stake, number one, if we do nothing, and what you can achieve if we work together to get everyone covered and lower costs for all Americans.
So a lot of what you're saying is that he has to reduce this to a personal level. And he was so good on the campaign trail in personalizing issues. But this is a tough one because a lot of Americans are happy with their health care. A lot of Americans, because they have employer-provided insurance, are kind of insulated from the true costs. So this is not an easy task for him.
Well, you know, that's somewhat true, that some Americans feel somewhat insulated from the cost. But the out-of-pocket expenditures for families, this is where it's going on in household by household, they went up between, I think it was 2001 and 2006, some period in the last decade. They've gone up like 30%, your out-of-pocket expenditures. So you have insurance, but you notice that, for example, you go to the doctor and you still get hit with a big bill. Mm-hmm. And you think to yourself, well, maybe it's just my policy. Maybe it's just this doctor. Maybe it's this one condition I have. But Americans are aware at home that they're spending more and more out of pocket, even though they have health insurance. And they feel insecure. You know, 14,000 people in this country lose their health insurance every day. So you know if you change a job, if you move away to another state, if you have a child who has asthma, so there's a pre-existing condition, there are all kinds of reasons where one bad blow and you've lost your health insurance. So there's a great sense of insecurity.
We have only another minute before we have to take a break, but talk about the strategy to try to employ your vast organization of individuals who were so critical to the campaign. You worked on the campaign. You saw that firsthand. This is the first really big test of taking a campaign organization, using it in a legislative battle. What are you doing? What are the problems? What's the outlook?
Well, you know, that is a somewhat separate operation from the White House, but as you probably know if you've ever signed up for any of the Obama for America, Organizing for America in the, now that he's president, organizations, there is a tremendous grassroots organization operation underway where individuals are sharing their stories, people are going door to door, there are community meetings where people are talking about what's going on in their lives. In addition to that, we have thousands of people writing their stories into www.healthreform.gov, which is the HHS website, which is taking in people's stories. So there is a tremendous grassroots operation underway.
Linda Douglas, from Communications Director of the White House for Healthcare Reform, delighted to have you with us on the Diane Rehm Show. Thanks for joining us. I'll be back with the panelists and more conversation in just a minute. Stay with us.
National broadcast of the Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by Vicki and Roger Sant and Island Press, which provides solutions to environmental problems in print, in person, and online at islandpress.org. By the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. And by the German Embassy, presenting Germany Info, a web publication with daily news from Germany, business and investment information, and suggestions for travel to Europe, on the web at germany.info. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Inspired by Dante's Inferno, a psychiatrist developed a 22-point scale for measuring evil, from justifiable homicide to torture and murder. How society could use this new tool on the Diane Rehm Show next hour. Welcome back. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane. Our subject this hour, healthcare. The blitz that's now taking place, White House, President Obama tonight will be speaking to the country at a news conference. He's going around the country tomorrow to Ohio. A major moment in this presidency, and we're talking about it with Holly Bailey from Newsweek Karen Tumulty from Time Magazine, Julie Rovner from National Public Radio. Let me read a couple emails, and you can respond to them. Peggy in St. Louis: if Republicans truly think health care legislation is moving too quickly, why don't they just cancel the recess and spend the time working only on health care? What do you think, Karen?
Actually, that would be a really good idea.
And here we have Charles writing to us. Please talk about the relationships between the Blue Dog Democrats. These, of course, as we've been mentioning, these are the conservative Democrats, often from southern or border states. Blue Dog Democrats who oppose this policy and the health care industry. Is there a connection, Julie?
Not necessarily. You know, I think the Blue Dog Democrats are really fiscal conservatives. That's how they mm-hmm. talk about themselves. They are deficit hawks. But it was interesting over the weekend. There were several interviews with Mike Ross, who's the head of the health care task force from Arkansas, who kept saying, we want more cost control in this bill. And then people would pin him down and saying, well, what do you need? And he couldn't really come up with any specific idea. So I'm wondering what went on in that 3-hour meeting yesterday with the president and the Blue Dogs.
Well, as we were saying earlier, these are also the Democrats who are most susceptible to Republican opposition, and particularly Republican opposition using the word tax and spend liberals, which has been the Republican mantra for a long time, Holly.
Right. And basically, you know, what we've seen is the Blue Dogs have been a sort of a thorn in President Obama's side, you know, for this entire term. You know, they challenged him on the stimulus. They've been fighting him on economic recovery stuff, and mainly because they're worried about this coming up in their own campaigns.
We have an email from Evan in Baltimore who writes, much is being made of the support of the public for health care reform. 49% seems like Obama is losing. This fails to take into account the 51 opposed, the split among people wanting more reform and those wanting less. Most of the country wants reform. Don't stop now. Is that fair? And of course, Linda Douglas was making that point, too.
Most of the country wants reform, but what they don't agree what reform looks like. And that is really the crux of this. Yes, there is a broad consensus that this healthcare system needs to be fixed. But now that we are into talking about what that fix looks like, it becomes a lot harder to get a consensus.
Okay, joining us on the phone is Vin Weber. He's a former member of Congress from Minnesota and a Republican consultant, a longtime expert on these matters. And Vin Weber, welcome to the Diane Rehm Show. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, good to be with you, Steve. How are you today?
Good. Now, we were talking about the politics of this issue, and
sure.
You have the famous comment by Senator DeMint that this could be President Obama's Waterloo. You have Bill Kristol saying this is time to move in for the kill. Does this reflect mainstream Republican thinking?
Inartfully stated, it might. First of all, this is a big and serious issue, and no one that I know is motivated purely by politics on this, because the implications are so great. But I do think that there is, just practically speaking, there are some parallels to this. You know, if you think way back to the Reagan administration, suppose Ronald Reagan had been defeated on his tax cut mm-hmm. in the first year he was in office. Can't predict exactly, but it would have fundamentally crippled the direction of that administration, at least for a long time. I would argue the same thing was true in the Clinton administration when health care went down to defeat. It didn't destroy the Clinton presidency, but I think it changed the direction of that presidency a lot. And shortly after that, we heard President Clinton say, this is the end of the era of big government. Mm-hmm. There were no great big initiatives. And in fact, he compromised on a whole lot of things that Republicans wanted, like welfare reform and NAFTA and GATT and things. So in the sense that this is the largest domestic priority, putting aside for a minute the rescue of the economy itself mm-hmm. of this administration, yes, I think that if this goes down to defeat, and we could talk about what that actually means in this case, I think it changes the trajectory of the administration and moves it to the center or just cripples it politically. I think that's just a practically speaking, that's what I think happens.
So this, you agree, we were talking about this earlier, that headline New York Times this morning, a defining moment for the presidency, and that this is not just about health care. This is about the sway and power and influence of this administration on other issues as well.
I think it certainly will have an impact down the road. They're playing a high-stakes game, too, with the president putting out, getting out front and center on this, the press conference tonight, the interviews that he's done the last couple of days, town meetings and things like that, because the greatest strength that this administration has is the perception that this president is very popular and can move public opinion. He may well do that. But on a major issue like this, arguably, other than the macroeconomy itself, the most important issue that he has up, if he makes himself front and center in this argument and does not move public opinion, then you fundamentally weaken the president in his ability to influence legislative agenda going forward. People that serve in the Congress, where I was for 12 years, take note of those things. And as long as Democrats and some Republicans think that this president is capable of moving public opinion on issues that he cares about, they're going to be more inclined to support him. But if that perception erodes, it will weaken his ability to influence other issues as well.
Now, you mentioned the early years of the Reagan administration and when his tax cuts passed the Congress, even though Congress, the House, was in Democratic hands. And
right.
I was covering the Congress at the time, and I remember talking to Tip O'Neill, the Democratic speaker, many times, apropos of your point, saying, I can't stand up to Ronald Reagan. He is too powerful. He's too influential. He's too able to sway public opinion in exactly the way you have just described it. Are Republicans afraid of Barack Obama? Do they fear his political gifts at this point?
I think that that is a key question, and I think the answer to that question is shifting rapidly. 30 days ago, I think the answer was clearly yes. But we are in the middle of a sea change. Now, sea changes in politics can reverse themselves in a matter of days. But as of now, I don't think that there is that degree of concern about the president or fear of the president's ability to influence. Let me make one other point, which you also probably remember. When Ronald Reagan went on national television to support a tax cut, Capitol Hill was flooded with telephone calls, letters. We didn't have email at that time. A real outpouring, and that's what led Tip O'Neill to say the kind of things he said to you. But a couple of years later, the president and the Congress put together a deficit reduction package that included a tax increase, TEFRA. The president went on television again to urge support for this deficit reduction package that included a tax increase, and the response was nothing, zero. I remember that lesson pretty well because it's what it says is a popular president can really rouse the country when his agenda is popular. And the question facing President Obama right now is not simply one of his ability to communicate, which we all think is extraordinary, but is he trying to sell a product that the public simply does not want? You've seen the polling on health care. Maybe you discussed it earlier in the program.
Right.
I don't know.
We did.
You've seen the polling go downhill, and the president may well be trying to sell something that the public simply doesn't want to buy. And the experience with Ronald Reagan says even a great communicator has a hard time selling something the public doesn't want.
Final question, Vin. Does the Republican Party satisfy itself with simply opposing whatever Obama does? Or is there a responsibility to those 47 million Americans who don't have health insurance? Is there a responsibility? We had Linda Douglas on just before you saying there are a lot of American families out there who are worried that if they lose their job, they're one paycheck away from losing their health insurance, that there is a lot of anxiety. Is there a responsibility from a legislative point of view to participate in this and not just oppose what the Democrats do?
Yeah, I think that Republicans, by and large, want to be involved in the process of reform. They think reform is necessary. And I think most of them believe that part of reform includes extending access to at least a large percentage of the 47 million that are uninsured. As you know, that number is not homogeneous. There are different categories of people, and some of them are more urgently in need of help than others. But I think Republicans believe that. But they also have some very strong concerns. They're not going to support anything that sets up basically a government-run insurance company, the so-called public option, because of where they believe that leads ultimately, which is a government-controlled health care system. They are not going to support something that is financed through what they consider economically punitive tax increases. So there are limitations on what they can do. But on this issue particularly, if the president and the Democrats wanted to pursue a bipartisan agenda, I think Republicans do feel an obligation to participate in it.
Vin Weber, former Republican congressman from Minnesota and now a Republican consultant. Always a pleasure, Vin. Thanks for calling us.
Great to be with you this morning.
Okay, bye-bye. We have time for a couple of our listeners, and I want to get a few of them in on this. So, Jean from St. Louis, welcome.
Hi. I wanted to ask a couple questions. I think this is too momentous a bill not to be done bipartisanly, and I'm wondering what happened to Obama's initiative, because as a big supporter of his, that's what I'm looking to have. Is it more universal? And we're going to lose, I think, in esteem, we're going to lose my heart at least, if this doesn't go bipartisanly, and I think that's more important than hurrying. And then also...
Hold on, just a minute. Hold on to that question, Jean, because I want to get Holly to answer it. One of the key questions here is, do the Democrats continue to negotiate with Republicans and try to find a bill? What's your best read?
Well, the Senate is trying, I think. Max Baucus has been, sort of delaying this because he wants bipartisan support in the Senate.
Chairman of the Finance Committee.
Yes. Yeah. And in the House, we're not seeing that so much. But that's been, a problem for the House this entire session.
Okay, Jean, your other question, quickly.
Well, and I want to hear Obama say that he wants it bipartisan. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is, we seem to be reinventing the wheel, because Obama talked about using, the federal employees' health care model, or using what Congress gets. And if they already have that kind of commonality, why does it look like we're starting from scratch? Why isn't it easier to do?
Okay, Jean, thanks. Julie?
Well, we're not starting from scratch. In fact, most of the bills are based on a program that is similar in structure to what the federal employees have. The question is whether or not there will be within that this public plan option. But if I could go back and address the bipartisan mm-hmm. issue, it's pretty hard to be bipartisan if you've got a big section of the Republican Party who's bound and determined to, have the whole thing tank so that they can go back and beat the president and beat the Democrats in the next election. So you do have a number of Republicans who would like to participate, and those are the people who are in the room with Senator Baucus trying to work out a deal. But you've also got, the Jim DeMint of the world who are saying we would like to take more time because we would like to drag this out and make the whole thing go away.
But to be completely fair and accurate, you also have a lot of Democrats, particularly on the liberal side of the agenda, who don't want to deal with Republicans, saying that will simply water down the bill. We're much better off passing a bill just with Democratic votes and doing it in the way we want to do it.
That's right. And in the House, they don't need necessarily Republican votes, although they do need these blue dog Democrats who they're having trouble getting.
I'm Steve Roberts, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. Time for a couple more callers. Let's see. Let's take Matt in Cielo, North Carolina. Matt, welcome. You're on The Diane Rehm Show.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to add something in the mix. I wanted to comment on our country's, in my view, irrational fear of socialism. I'm going to try and make this brief. I have two friends from Denmark, two women who are probably one of the most hopeful, optimistic people you'd ever want to meet. They spend 50% of their income goes to taxes, but they have guaranteed health care and guaranteed education, including college. Yes, a lot of their money goes into taxes, but they don't live in fear. Their future is open. Their money is theirs, and they are just very optimistic and hopeful. Between the 30% maybe that we spend in taxes and the money that we spend on insurance premiums every month and the money that we put away or have to come up with when our kids go to school, we're probably paying as much, and there's nothing guaranteed. So every American lives with this fear, this sword over their head. Oh, my God, what if me or one of my family gets sick, or how is my kid going to get an education and get a good job?
Okay.
And I don't know that their model would work for us, but it certainly shouldn't be just completely off the table.
Thank you very much, Matt. I appreciate it. Karen, talk about, there's a lot of discussion about European systems work better at less cost.
And with often better results in terms of a healthier population. But the fact is, I think one of the great lessons of 93-94, the one that Barack Obama took to heart, is that you cannot succeed at this unless you can assure people that they won't lose what they have.
And the other mantra we're hearing from the president, and we will hear it again tonight, is this is not government-run healthcare. Matt was talking about fear of socialism, but the truth is that that is a non-starter in American politics.
Right. And the president has mentioned this public plan. I mean, one thing I'm looking for tonight is he talked about the public option, and he keeps saying again and again that this bill, you can keep what you have. You don't have to go into this if you don't want to. But he has not said if he would veto a bill without that public option. And that's one of the areas he's danced around. So that's something I'll be looking for.
Very quickly, Barbara in Medford, Oregon, we just have a minute. So give us your thoughts quickly.
Oh, good morning. morning. It really irritates me to hear comments by Republicans to the effect that they want him to fail and they want him to crush him. Because, I mean, if they do that, then we all fail. I also think that they're very hypocritical since they do receive health care funded by taxpayers. I think this is a time where we really need to address this problem. Is very serious, and let's stop playing partisan politics.
Barbara, thanks so much for your call. I'm going to give each of you quickly a chance to say, where do you think this comes out? What are we going to see in the weeks ahead? Karen Tumulty.
You know, I would no more predict that.
But what's your best guess? Are we going to have a bill or not?
I think we're going to have a bill. Whether that bill is really reform, whether it's transformative of the healthcare system, I don't know.
What do you think, Holly Bailey?
I think we'll have a bill as well. You know, one thing that's interesting, President Obama in a call this week with bloggers said that he was looking to the conference committees to really see how this is going to shake out. I think that's what we're going to have to do as well.
When he said, don't bet against me, part of this is psychology, isn't it? To try to say, if the bill is inevitable, get on board. And this is a big part of what his campaign is, isn't it? It's sort of like changing the psychology of the country.
Right. But I don't know that that's really working.
What do you think, Julie?
Yeah, I'm with Karen. I think this is sort of too big to fail, but I don't know in the end what's going to be in that bill that finally emerges.
So really, all of you are still as confused as when we started the program. Final point, Holly Bailey, do you expect the president tonight to say anything different from what we've heard before? Or is it going to be the same basic arguments?
I think that's the big question. I mean, every day this week he's come before reporters and not really said anything new, not said any kind of new details. But, you know, we're getting to the point to where he might have to say something new to really get this through. So we'll be looking for that.
Holly Bailey, White House correspondent from Newsweek magazine. Also, Karen Tumulty, national political reporter from Time. Julie Rovner, healthcare correspondent for NPR. Delighted to have you all. Thanks also to Linda Douglas from the White House, Vin Weber, Republican consultant. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane. Thanks for spending your morning with us.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, and Denise Couture. The engineer is Andrew Chadwick. Dori Anisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org.